Yo, Wiz, man, turn it down, baby. Live from Atlanta, Georgia. That's right, man. I put on for my city. Hey, I got one of the most amazing guests in the world today, man. This is one of my player partners, my friends, man. He's only one call away, man. Yo, he just can't wait to be king. He's the American dream. You know what I'm saying? You done seen him on Thea. He's an ATL legend, even though he ain't from ATL. He hails from Chicago. Yo, I'm talking about my man, Jason Weaver.
What up, Jack?
From the shot. From the group home.
Represent, man.
Yo.
I'm so happy to be here, man.
Man, I'm so happy you here, bro.
It's an honor. It's been a long time coming. We've been trying to make this happen. I was like out of town for a minute. Then I came back. But, you know, anytime you got something going on, Jack, you know I'm always going to show up, man. So hey, thank you for having me.
Listen, let me tell you something, man. Your song, One Call Away, like you answered on the first ring for your dog.
For sure.
You was on a hot date with a young lady and everything. And you was macking and talking to me at the same time and said, no diggity, no doubt, Jack.
Hey, man. You gotta keep it player.
Let's do it.
You gotta keep it player. No, I mean, whenever I see your name pop up, man, like I said, I always pick up the phone because first and foremost, I respect you for the man that you are, and of course for the entertainer that you are. There's a lot of work that I want to do with you in the future too. So, you know, this is just all about friendship, man, and about us supporting one another as black men and, you know, trying to help each other out as we going along on this journey.
Hey, man, let me give him a little background real quick, man. Mm-hmm. So let me tell you something about what Jason Weaver means to me. And at the time, I think I probably was in the fifth grade, and I was living in a battered women's shelter with my mom. Mm. And so you already know what that means. She was going through some domestic situations, and it was a movie that came on with one of my childhood heroes and lifetime heroes, his life story, Michael Jackson. Mm. And you played young Michael Jackson, and I saw this inside this battered women's shelter at 10 years old and whatnot. And nobody couldn't tell me that you wasn't Michael Jackson.
Oh, man, thank you.
You know what I'm saying? And then on top of that, I went on to see you in The Lion King a couple of years later, you know, when I joined Cub Scouts.
That's right.
You know, and, you know, we were watching it on VHS at a Cub Scout camp out and everything. And I recognized the voice and everything. Yo, it was instilled in my mind. I was like, Michael Jackson is Lion King. Then, you know, yeah, after that, man, you know, it's Thea.
Yeah.
It's Thea. You know, you was not Brandy's little brother, but Brandy's big brother.
Yep. Brandy's big brother in that
show. Yeah, yeah,
yep.
And then you went on to do more things, and then you did ATL, and you know what I'm saying? You have a host of credits, man, credit after credit. And, you know, you're not just a TV singer, because most people, they sing on TV, but they not singers. Like, like for instance, I love Leon to death, and he's played everybody or one of the greatest singers alive. You just choose him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, not to say he can't hold a note, but he ain't put out no album.
Nah, that's real. That's
hold
real.
On, but he do got a band or something, right?
No, he actually, I think Leon, because I follow him on Instagram. Shout out to Leon.
Leon puts on,
he has a live band. And I think he goes around New York City, around Manhattan, and does shows. And from what I heard, they're really good.
He's amazing.
Yeah.
He might as well.
Yeah, he might as well. I mean, he's an all around, you know, Renaissance man. He acts. I think at one point in time, he modeled. Mm. You know, he sings. I think he may even play.
Mm.
So, man, there are a lot of talented, actors, you know, thespians and people like that have multiple things that they can do, like myself and Leon. So, shout out to all the entertainers out there that, you know, make it happen in that regard.
Mm-hmm. And then, even my man that played Joe Jackson.
Oh, Lawrence Hilton Jacobs.
He's so unsung, bro.
Man,
you see him in
great.
Everything.
He's great, man. Lawrence, you know what I'm saying? Or Larry, as I call him. Man, he doesn't really get the credit, I think, that he rightfully deserves, man. Lawrence Hilton Jacobs has been, you know, on our TV screen since, like, Cooley High.
Cooley High.
You know what I'm saying? Putting it down for the culture. And on top of him, you know, just being a phenomenal actor and an absolute pleasure to work alongside with on that show, he's a great person, man. He really was there as a mentor, served as a mentor to all of the young men that were on the Jacksons at that time. Because we were all young, including Terrence Howard.
I was just about to bring him up, bro.
Terrence Howard was in that. But at that time, I think Terrence was like maybe 20, 21.
Yeah.
So all of us were like, you know, kids involved in this amazing project. And, you know, Larry was definitely there to help guide us along the way and provide insight, encouragement, you know, motivation. Man, it was, same with Angela Bassett, man. That whole experience was just the shit.
Did you understand that, though, at the time when it was happening? Like who they were and how much it meant to, like, to the culture? And
yeah.
Or were you just a good kid?
No.
Because there ain't nothing wrong with just being a good, respectable kid.
No, I've always been blessed, man. I was a blessed child.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Just keeping it real. Now, that being said, I was a regular kid like everybody else. So there were moments, of course, when my mother had to check me, you know what I'm saying, and put me in line, you know, with certain things as everybody did during their upbringing. But I understood at a very early age when I really began to start working consistently as a professional that I was in a very unique position. And so I never took that for granted. And I never treated it like, you know, it was just something that was an everyday thing. And, you know, the confirmation for that definitely was working on the Jacksons miniseries. I mean, you know, the auditioning process to play Michael was very strenuous and hectic in itself because there were kids auditioning literally from all over the world for that one role within that age group. And then going through that process of casting and then you know, being flown out to Los Angeles and having to audition in front of the directors and the writers and the producers and the Jackson family. And then after that, then Michael getting like the last three, you know, select candidates that the family felt strongly about in casting and the producers, then those going to him and then him ultimately having to make the final decision. I mean, man, by the time I got on set, I knew that I was there for a reason. That, you know, I was following in my purpose. I didn't call it then, but I knew that I was there for a reason. And so I really wanted to make sure that I took full advantage of the situation. I wanted to make sure that I was on my P's and Q's at all times because I knew that there was always some other kid or somebody else waiting in the wings ready to replace me. So there was really no time to play around, and there was no time to focus on the pressure of it all. The only thing you could focus on was executing. And that's all we did, literally 7 days a week, damn near for 5 months straight. I mean, seriously, we rehearsed on our days off. That was something that we willingly did, voluntarily did as cast members, even, you know, after we would rehearse on Saturdays and after weeks long of shooting on Sundays, we would still get together in a room similar to this one with a mirror and we would rehearse and prepare for Monday. So it was not a fucking game at all. And I think, you know, thankfully at the end of the day, that work ethic that was, you know, placed into that, that amount of dedication and commitment to what we were there to do, I think, you know, translated over well on the screen and was able to resonate and connect with the viewers. And I think to this day, it's one of the reasons why that miniseries is still respected and still appreciated and enjoyed by families all over the world today, even with it.
Hey, what's up? This your boy Jack Thriller, man. And you know, whenever I'm trying to rise to the occasion and really put my stamp on that tramp, I'm going with Blue Chew. Blue Chew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredient as Viagra and Cialis, but in a chewable tablet at a fraction of the cost. You know, Blue Chew makes it look like I'm running a train on a grill, but it's really just me by myself. You know, it's the better version of myself. And, you know, if you sign up today, you know, you can get 10% off with my promo code at bluechew.com/thriller. You know, some of our licensed medical providers, they're right on tap. It's easy. It's online. It's discreet. Hey, and yo, it's cool. BlueChew.com.
But yeah, it amazing experience. And that being said too, and this goes out to the Jackson family, if y'all ever see this, you know, thank y'all so much. Thank you to Mrs. Jackson. Thank you to Joe Jackson, you know, God rest his soul. Thank you to Jermaine, Margaret Maldonado, his wife at the time, Suzanne DePass. And lastly, and most importantly, Michael, you know, God rest his soul. I really, really appreciate him for giving a kid from Chicago a shot, because he didn't have to do that. It did not have to go down that way. There were so many other kids who were going hard for that role, but he chose me, and I appreciate him for doing that. Real talk, though. Real talk, though. Because that's really, I had done films prior to that, and I had been in television projects prior to that. But that was the first project that, you know, really gave me the opportunity to showcase all of the talent that I've been blessed with, you know, on a very big stage. And that's what really, you know, I would say kickstarted my career to where I've been able to work consistently after that. So, yeah, I owe a lot to Michael and the Jackson family. I really, really do. First and foremost, to God, of course. Absolutely. But, you know, at the same time, you know, my mother who was there, who prepared me for the role to audition. And then ultimately the Jackson family and Suzanne DePass and Mr. Gordy and everybody for supporting me throughout that whole situation.
Man, that's one of the most inspirational, amazing stories. And it was definitely 30 years ago.
It was 30?
Like, yeah, because okay. I'm 40 now.
Okay. So yeah, and I'm 43.
I was definitely 10 when it happened.
And I was 13. Yeah.
Oh, you okay? Yeah. I ain't tripping.
Yeah, I was 13.
Yeah, dig. You know, one of the things that stood out about that movie too, when on your part, mm-hmm. was when you did the national anthem. And this ain't the first time I'm gonna talk about this tonight, because mm-hmm. you know, Music Soul Child coming a little bit later.
Okay.
And I always wanted to sing the national anthem.
Okay.
You know, when you learn, you had to learn the national anthem on the airplane as Michael Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. and I never knew the national anthem.
You never knew it?
I never knew it, and I ain't know it till I had to do it. The situation is, and I put this on Instagram too.
Okay.
Tank, we was at a charity basketball event, okay. and he was supposed to sing the national anthem.
Okay.
But I think he wanted to, like, you know what I'm saying, 10 grand or 20 grand or some shit to do it.
Okay.
And then they was like, man, is anybody else want to do this shit? I was like, I'll do it.
You volunteered?
I volunteered to do it. And I didn't even know. I was hating. That was me hating. I didn't know I was being a hater.
No, I didn't think you were being a hater. You just stepped up to the plate, man.
I,
Tank didn't want to do it. Somebody had to do it.
He needed the money. He wanted the money.
And yes. I'm not mad at it, because that is Tank. He's a phenomenal vocalist. If you're going to get the national anthem from Tank, you're going to get a fucking performance.
You're going to get a performance.
So I get it. But you stepped up to the plate.
I was just bullshitting, though.
Did you fuck it up? Did you know the
man,
rules?
I fucked it up.
Ooh.
Yeah, yeah. I wanted to sing the national anthem and everything, and I forgot a couple of parts, but I did a couple of parts right on there.
Okay.
And he critiqued me in the locker room after the game.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, because somebody recorded it. They sent it to us,
okay.
and we watched it on the phone. It's on my Instagram, and you could check it out. But I'm telling you, when they called my name for real to come sing the shit,
yeah.
and next coming to sing the national anthem, Jack Thriller, I'm like, oh shit, this is my man.
Oh, Jack so you was bullshitting, and then they really called you
they
on
really
your bluff?
They called me. It was a packed gym.
I'm mad I missed
Jalen
that.
Jalen Rose was in there, all kind of.
Oh, yeah, Jalen Rose in there. Oh, you was out there looking crazy,
looking
dog.
Looking crazy. But, yo, the fact that I was Jack Thriller,
yeah.
and people were familiar with me.
You were able, it was able to gloss over.
It was able to go off.
Okay.
And
okay.
people, they didn't know that I was going to sing that through. And I hit some notes that they were impressed with.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I hit some notes that they were impressed with. Because I hold a note.
Okay.
I'm not a singer like Jason Weaver.
But you can hold a note.
I can hold a note. Matter of fact, I'm actually working on a comedy album right now, R&B comedy album with RL.
That's dope. You know what? And it's funny. I think you had mentioned that to me the last time we hung out that you were going to do that.
I gotta let you hear some songs.
It's jamming?
It's jamming.
For real?
I'm the one.
Am I going to get on it? You going to let your boy get on it?
I was going to ask you about that shit. I ain't going to even lie.
Nah.
But since you brought it out.
Yeah. Man, let me get on that shit, man.
Since you
brought it out. No, let's have some fun. I mean, because, no, music is a big, music is a big deal for me. You know what I'm saying?
To this day?
Man, I come from a musical family. Here's the funny part about
man,
it.
Man, can you give them that musical family Rolodex real quick,
nah,
man.
real talk.
Flex
so,
on their ass.
So my family and I, we hail from Chicago. My mother and my aunts, my grandfather and my grandmother, they're all originally from here, though, from Atlanta. So they migrated up during the Great Migration because my grandfather was a pastor. And they, the church put him in charge of a church called First Progressive on the south side of Chicago. And my mother and my aunts grew up singing in the choir. My grandmother was the choir director, the musical director. And so my family grew up harmonizing, singing gospel, things like that. Eventually, Chicago became kind of like a hub for jingles in, like, I say, like the late 70s and early 80s up until maybe like the mid 90s. So like major advertising campaigns that were put together on Madison Avenue in New York, the jingles and the commercials for those campaigns that were brought up in New York and constructed in New York, all of the creative end of those campaigns was done in Chicago. So the majority of the time it'd be local talent from the city that was producing the jingles, singing the jingles, writing them, you know, performing them as musicians and as well as vocalists. And so that's how me and my family, like, came up. So myself, my cousin Tricky Stewart.
Tricky Stewart, your cousin.
Multi Grammy Award winning producer. As a matter of fact, congratulations, Tricky. His latest hit, Break My Soul with Beyonce.
That's crazy.
That's his second
one. That's crazy.
That's his second one with Beyonce because he has Single Ladies with Beyonce as well. And he also did Umbrella for Rihanna, some of his most notable hits that he's been a part of. But he's been making hit records for like 25 years. My cousin Koo Carell also came up under that same system. Accomplished multi-Grammy Award winning music and vocal producer. Is working on with Rihanna right now. Her new album, works with Cher, Jennifer Lopez. The list goes on and on and on. He worked on the Avatar soundtrack. I mean, I come from a family of just extremely talented individuals. And I mean, that's not only including, you know, my mother and my aunt's accomplishments. My mother, Kitty Haywood, her sister, Ann Stewart, my late aunt, Vivian Harrell, and my cousin Cynthia Harrell, back in the day, were in a group called Kitty and the Haywoods that was signed to Mercury Records and Capitol Records. They were discovered by Curtis Mayfield. Wow. And as a matter of fact, you can hear my mother and my aunts, for people that don't know, but I'm shouting out my mother and my family because I love them so much and I'm so proud of them.
I can't shout out my mama on nothing.
You know what I'm saying? Like, if you listen to Giving Them Something He Can Feel on the Sparkle soundtrack with Aretha Franklin, that is my mama and my aunts in the background. They sang backgrounds on that whole soundtrack, and that was kind of entryway into the music industry. Yep. And so that's how I came up. Was through them, through the foundation, you know, and the path that they laid.
What about the Braxtons, man?
The Braxtons, I mean, those are close family friends. I've known the Braxton family since when I was like 13, when my cousin Tricky was working with the Braxtons. They were signed to LaFace Records. Mm-hmm. That's how I know Tamar, Tawanda, Tracy, God rest her soul. You know, that's how I know that whole family. Because mm-hmm. that whole LaFace connection when my cousin moved down here mm-hmm. with an artist that was signed to him by the name of Sam Salter. Sam Salter, God rest his soul. He just recently passed, unfortunately.
Sam Salter is dead?
Sam passed, man. Sam passed about 6 or 7 months ago in Los Angeles.
Out of here.
Yeah, Sam was a really good friend of mine. He was basically an extended member of our family. I've known Sam since he first got his deal on LaFace Records. And when they all came down here to Atlanta, Georgia from Los Angeles, and they were my cousin Tricky and his partner at the time, my other cousin Sean Hall, were working on Sam's first album.
Okay.
And yeah, and then you know, after their relationship dissolved, Sam went back out to Los Angeles to continue working as a artist and a songwriter. We continued to, you know, stay in contact even up until maybe like a year or so before he passed, because I hadn't been out to Los Angeles like that, and that was like during COVID in the whole nine. So everybody was just kind of, you know, like at home. So that's when it basically happened, and I think that's why a lot of people weren't really aware of his passing, except for like his devoted fans, because, you know, everybody was hunkered down and just trying to survive during the pandemic, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But rest in peace to Sam Salter. For those people who may not be familiar with the artist and with the man, he was a brilliant, absolutely brilliant R&B artist who was like really one of the first artists on the Face Records, who originally hailed from Los Angeles, California, and he was something else. He was a great guy on top of being a phenomenal artist. So rest in peace, Sam. Love you, brother. And yeah, that's our history.
Yo, Jason, you talked about something that I really want people to know that I ain't never heard you talk about before.
Mm.
Now, before you played the legendary role of Michael Jackson, mm-hmm. Little Michael Jackson and whatnot, you did things before.
Yeah.
Can you tell them those things that you did before that?
Yeah, sure. My first feature film, as a matter of fact, was called The Long Walk Home, which starred Whoopi Goldberg and Sissy Spacek. And it was about two families during the Montgomery bus boycott, or like, you know, kind of like the kickoff to the civil rights movement. And I played Whoopi Goldberg's youngest son. The character's name was Franklin Cotter. And we shot in Montgomery, Alabama. This was in 1989. It was my first film, and I had the honor of working with Whoopi, Ving Rhames, Erica Alexander, who was on Living Single, Sissy Spacek, legendary actress. Who else? Oh, so many people in that film.
Erica Alexander, that's Maxine, right?
Yeah. She played my sister.
I was so in love with Maxine.
Oh, yeah. Everybody
oh,
was.
Oh, my God.
Everybody yeah. was. Because, I mean, Erica's a beautiful woman. So
she's gorgeous.
Yeah, yeah. And a phenomenal actress, brilliant actress. Yeah. So I totally get it.
Yeah.
I think immediately after that, I did a French film that we shot in Missouri called Miss Missouri. It's like a foreign film. But that really didn't get any kind of...
You speak French?
Hell no. Nah. I mean, we shot it in English. The star of the film was like this big time French movie star at the time. He was like France's answer to like Dustin Hoffman. At least that's how it was described to me at the time.
That's what it. We got amazing film for you.
Yeah, yeah. But it was actually cool though, because that gave me the opportunity to work with an actor from overseas and essentially work from a crew from overseas at a very young age. So that, you know, although it wasn't like a commercially successful film in that regard,
mm-hmm.
It did help me as far as developing as a professional,
mm-hmm.
because I was thrust in this environment where hardly anybody really spoke any English,
mm-hmm.
and we were there to like shoot a film together. And so it kind of like prepared me to be able to adapt to whatever, you know, moving forward with different projects that I would work on.
Mm-hmm.
It prepared me mentally to be able to adapt to whatever environment that I was in.
Mm-hmm.
So that film was actually just an exercise in professionalism. So looking back in retrospect, I'm glad I did that film, because right after that, I was blessed to work on not the miniseries, The Women of Brewster Place, but there was a series adaptation to that miniseries just called Brewster Place that was done on ABC. And I was on that show. I was one of the series regulars on that show alongside with Oprah. We shot that in Chicago on the West Side at Harpo Studios. Had the honor and the privilege of working alongside with her. Shout out to DeLeon Richards. DeLeon Richards was on that show with me. Phenomenal gospel singer, vocalist. She played my sister on the show. That experience of working with Oprah. Man, let me tell y'all something. Anybody out there, aspiring actors, actresses, whatever, writers, producers, if you have the opportunity to work with Oprah Winfrey, do it. Sorry. Do it. Do that shit. Working with Oprah Winfrey was one of the most rewarding experiences of my life and my career.
You got to explain this why.
Man, because...
She gave you some money. She gave you a call on the set.
Well, no, it wasn't just about the money, man. I mean, because we did get paid well. We were compensated well for the work we did. But it was what she represents, and even especially what she represented at that time. Mind you, this is a hugely successful Black woman who opens up a full studio on soundstage in the West Loop of Chicago, which at that time was underdeveloped. It was like called the Meatpacking District. So there was nothing over there but like butcher shops and like wholesale fruit markets. And it was like a less than desirable area. And when she came over there and built that studio, Oprah, in my opinion, and I think many Chicagoans would agree with it, is responsible for kickstarting the West Loop of Chicago, which is now one of the most like successful areas in the city, filled with restaurants, clubs, everything. Oprah kicked that off. So to see a Black woman doing that, owning her own studio right then and there, she's shooting an Oprah show on one side, shooting Brewster Place on the other side, all of these people revolving around her at her beck and call. On top of that, she's taking the time to communicate with us, the Black children that are on the set. And I mean, when I say communicating with us, I'm not just talking small talk. I'm talking, how you doing in school? Because our classroom was right next to the makeup room. So before she would come in the makeup room, she would come in the classroom and sit down and ask us and ask the teacher how we were doing in school. And would ask us about our studies, would ask us about things outside of being entertainers. It was real like dialogue that she was having with us to prepare us for the world as just young Black children, whether we decide to stay in the business or not. There was a lot of insight. There was a lot of wisdom that she shared with us that I still carry with me to this day that had absolutely nothing to do with acting. Even as far as understanding my knowledge of self as a Black man, the first time and the only time I ever met Alex Haley was when Oprah Winfrey introduced me to him. That's on the set.
Crazy.
And he sat there.
That was a flex. Now that's flex. A flex.
Flag, but let me tell you what she
That's
did.
That's a flex.
Let me tell you what she did. And I had no idea how significant that this was when I was that age, right? She brings Alex Haley in. This is after work.
Roots Alex Haley.
Autobiography of Malcolm X. Alex
Autobiography
Haley.
Okay? Of Malcolm. I own that book to this day.
I own both of them. Like, phenomenal reads. He was a phenomenal man.
Yes.
Anyway, this man, she brings him to set after we wrap from work. She sets a chair in the middle of the set, and everybody has like this semicircle formed around him. She introduces him, and she asks him, please explain to everyone here your life story. Share with them your life story, your experiences. Share here with all of these beautiful Black people that you have here that's on this set, you know, what it was like making Roots. It was for us to walk away with something other than just a paycheck. And that's why I said, if any of you guys out there are ever fortunate enough to get the opportunity to work with Oprah Winfrey, man, do it, because you'll walk away with more than just, you know, the experience of trading lines with her on set. And it's really like a life-changing experience, you know, working with her. It really is.
Now, I was just about to ask you, like, who are some people that you been on set with, and then when you put Oprah out there, mm-hmm. I thought that was the pinnacle. But when you put Alex Haley out there,
it was incredible.
That's super ill.
Oh, it's ill. I mean, and you know, Whoopi did that for me when I did
that was ill. That was ill.
I know, bro. I've had
your
some
life
experience.
Is kind of crazy, man.
Your life is
super crazy,
hey,
man.
Hey, man, God has been walking with me since I jumped out the womb.
So you
bro.
Know that, and you really acknowledge that.
Oh, every day and every opportunity I can get. Like, I know I'm here because of God. Jack, I've been in some rooms, and I've been around some people throughout the course of my life and my career where I've even sat there sometimes and been like, holy shit. What is going on? What am I doing here right now?
What
really?
Keeps you so humble, man? Like, you ain't never flexed on me. Not even the first time I ever met you.
Well, you know what it is,
like,
Jack?
Like I you always want to meet, you know what I'm saying, somebody that you super look up to, mm-hmm. and everything. And I remember being super timid and super you know, insecure about coming up to you, even though I go on stage in front of, you know what I'm saying, hundreds of people at the time at Uptown Comedy Club and blah, blah, blah. When I saw you outside of this Shawty Low album release party, you was just chilling outside with the thugs and shit.
It was a lot of gangster shit going on that night.
A lot of gangster shit going on. I was like, man, hey, man, I got to go talk to this nigga. I don't care if he diss me or not.
Nah.
And if he do diss me, I'm not going to like you. Yo, I've had people diss me, and I didn't like them any less.
Yeah.
You know, because I understand that you can't, at a young age, you can't expect you out of somebody else.
That's true. But here's what I'll say, though, Jack. And it's for any entertainer out there. If you are blessed to get to a point where you're recognized in the street or your work is recognized and respected and someone takes the time out to acknowledge you, man, show that love back, because first and foremost, that person didn't have to come up and acknowledge you. That person didn't have to take time to look at your work. It's a blessing what we're able to do. You know, I don't know the exact percentage or the statistic, but to be a working, successful actor, I mean, that's a rarity, man. There are only so many people that get the opportunity to live in that kind of blessing. And so when you recognize that, when you realize that, when you've seen so many people, especially too, as I have throughout the course of my, 30 plus years of being in this business, man, I've seen them go up and I've seen them go down. I've seen them come. I've seen them go. And a lot of the times when you've seen that kind of movement in a person's career is because at some point they lost touch with what they got involved in it for in the first place. At some point in time in that journey, they forgot what it was about and they made it all about them. And when you get so caught up in ego, which is edging God out, as far as I'm concerned, when you get caught up in ego and it no longer becomes about the, or it's no longer about the journey, and the connection, recognizing the blessing that you have coming from God and the importance of the connection that you establishing with audience and fans. As soon as you forget that, that's when the blessing is taken away. That's when it begins to slowly kind of disintegrate. And you won't recognize it happening around you until you look around one day and go, man, holy shit. And I've seen that happen a lot of times with a lot of different actors, friends of mine, peers, people that you thought would never get to that point in their career where they would, quote unquote, hit rock bottom. But I've seen it happen. And it's all because they forgot. They forgot. And the one thing that I try not to do is ever forget where I come from, where my blessings come from, what I'm doing this for, who I'm doing this for. I try my best never to forget it. And I think that's one of the main reasons why I'm able to still navigate and move around, not only in this business, but in this life. I'm still here 43 years old because of that. Not even anything having to do with success of being in business. I'm still here alive because I embrace that philosophy. So when it comes to even our interaction and other performers that I meet, whether you're known, recognizable, or whether you're some cat up off the street that's just getting his feet wet, and if you come up to me respectfully, I will acknowledge you respectfully. And that's just how I keep it a stack as a man. Come to me with respect, I'll treat you with respect. And if you have any questions, and if I'm in a position at that time to answer whatever questions that you may have, or to provide any kind of insight or wisdom that I'm able to share, if I'm able to do it at that time, I'll do it with you. Because somebody did it for me. There were people that did it for me. So, no, I'm not on that shit. I'm not on that. This is something, we're all in this together. This business, this life, we're all in this together. We're here to enhance and help one another through conversation, through action, but we all in this together. And it's universal law, and it all goes around in a circle. And I think if you just keep that shit at the forefront of your mind, whether you're in the entertainment industry or you're involved in anything else that you're aspiring to do and become, you'll always be successful because your heart and your mind is in the right place and your spirit is in the right place. So that's what I come from. You dig?
100%.
Sorry, and I don't mean to be so boring, and I don't want this to sound like a Sunday sermon.
No, it
so
don't,
if you
want to
turn up, you know what I'm saying? Like,
hey, are we turned up, y'all? Y'all enjoying this?
No, nah, man, because you know Carlos, man, when I saw that episode with Los, man, he had me cracking up. That was a really entertaining episode. Shout out to Carlos, too, man, from 85 South.
Hey,
that was so funny.
You seen I was just on the 85 South show.
Yes, that was funny, too.
You saw we brought you up, and he said he got to have you on the show.
I would love to.
You coming on 85 South show,
man,
right?
Man, I would love to. Man, I'm such a big fan of those guys, man. I look at, you know, all their content. I actually ran into DC Young Fly over there by, man, where is that? Somewhere on the west side. West End.
Because
my boy has a barbershop over there. And I guess he comes through there every so often. So when I was waiting to get in the chair to get my hair cut, he comes walking in. We hit it off. DC is a great guy, man.
Super great guy.
Super great guy. I mean, that whole crew. I mean, I correspond with Los every once in a while via DM. You know, on social media. I think what those guys are doing, all of you guys, let me say this. You know, that even goes for Ronnie Jordan and all those guys and Tyler Chronicles and all those guys, man. What you gentlemen are doing, and even ladies that are involved in this, whether it's podcasting or having shows and platforms like this, man, you guys are so appreciated for what y'all are for what you all are doing and what you all are providing, the platform that you're providing, because it's given us an opportunity as black performers and artists and actors and actresses. We not able to get on the Jimmy Kimmels. We not able to get on the, you know, what's the other guy's name? Stephen Colbert and all those. Man, you guys are providing a platform for us where we can still connect with our people and with our audience. And you're doing it in a way where it doesn't fit the conventional mold. It's entertaining. It's funny. And I genuinely laugh when I look at all y'all on y'all's different shows and platforms. And I just want to let you know, and all the rest of the guys out there that are doing the same thing, man, I'm proud of y'all. Salute to y'all. Thank you guys for supporting people like myself, you know, to where I could continue to go out here and, you know, kind of share my stories and my experiences and what I'm doing in my career. Man, like I said, it's all a circle. So we all help one another, man. So I'm happy for y'all. I'm happy for all of us just being in this moment and us realizing the power that we have as black people in this space creatively, to where we can create our own opportunities and where we can help and uplift each other. So cheers to y'all.
Hey, man, I want to talk about your mama, man.
Sure.
Like, when I think about everything that you've said thus far, man, this ain't nothing to just start with what you want.
Right.
It had to be on the same token what she won. I can hear the Joe Jackson inside of her.
No.
When I say that, when I think about Joe Jackson, I don't believe he was abusive. Like,
okay,
like you played Michael Jackson before, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the rumors that you probably heard are. The things that you know might be a little bit more in touch and more realistic than the things that the status quo or the general public know. You dig? I think Michael Jackson was probably getting some regular ass whoopings. And he thought he was so spoiled that he thought he was getting killed.
Well, I'll say this, and it's not just his account, but it's from the account of the other family members. He was a very strong and strict disciplinarian. Let's just put it that way. Respectfully, I think, you know, maybe what people have to factor in with that kind of thing is, like, this is in the 60s. You know, Joe was working at the steel mill in Gary, Indiana, and he had some talented-ass kids. And he was like, man, we need to get the fuck up out of here. Start singing, nigga. You know what I'm saying? I just think Joe was just ready to go and live out that American dream. Now, the way that he went about doing it.
The way he was perceived or depicted.
I think if you talk to, and this is with all due respect for the family, I won't get that deep into it. But yeah. I think if you ask them, they would probably relay over to you that it probably could have been done a little bit differently. Mm. I think they understand and respect and appreciate the fact that Joe challenged them to rise to the next level. Mm-hmm. But if you ask some of them, I'm pretty sure some of them would say, well, I appreciate what he did, but it probably could have been done differently. Maybe. And I'm not speaking on behalf of the Jackson family. That's just my perception. You know what
Jackson,
I'm saying? From what I was able to see.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
You know what I mean?
But I done had some of the best ass whoopings in the world.
Me too. I done had some ass whoopings.
I've been thrown through windows. And
oh, man, I ain't never had that shit.
Yeah, I've been.
That's abuse, nigga.
Water hoses.
And you get thrown out of windows?
Yes, once again, at 10. I told you, I saw you in a battered women's shelter.
Oh, yeah.
I was fucked up when I saw the movie with you.
Got you. Yeah, that's serious.
Yeah, it didn't just stop at my mom. I was like, he didn't stop at her.
Oh,
he,
man.
It was for everybody. It was enough ass whooping for everybody.
That's crazy. I'm sorry you went through that, too. That's horrible.
I suffer from a seizure every now and then, but I'm straight. Mm. But what I was saying was, if I had an opportunity to have that same thing and then pushed inside of a direction where magnifying my talent.
Okay. Well, see, that's what my mama did for me.
That's what I'm talking about.
That's what my mama did for me.
You're better than this. Come on, let's get it right.
No. That's what my mama did for me. Listen.
I hear a lot of discipline in what you're saying when you were talking earlier.
Oh, discipline for sure. Because
and focus. Because you were saying that y'all did this even when you weren't getting paid.
Yeah.
And you understood the assignment.
No, absolutely. And here's the thing, and I want to establish this so people will know, so that there's clarity there. I told my mother that I wanted to get involved in the entertainment industry. I voluntarily came to her after watching E.T. and looking at Drew Barrymore and all of them acting in that movie. And I told her, I said, Mom, I want to do that. And it just so happened that my mother was in a position where she was already an accomplished professional working within, you know, commercials in the jingle world and stuff like that in Chicago. She had connections. She had relationships. And so when I expressed that interest of wanting to get involved, my mother then supported me first of all, this is what she said to me. She said, well, if you're going to do it, you're going to do it. It's going to require discipline. It's going to require focus. It's going to require hard work. It's not just about acting silly when you get in front of a camera. This is a job. This is a career. You will be thrust into an environment where you're working with adults, where you're working with professionals. They won't tolerate a kid being off the hinges. You know, like there was a whole week-long conversation that me and my mother had leading up to like my first commercial audition. And the reason why we had that was that first and foremost, I didn't waste her time because she was working and paying bills and doing what she had to do to take care of me as a single mother. But at the same time, I think she was cognizant aware of the fact that she didn't want my childhood to be altered or for me to have some kind of negative experience being involved in the industry. So she really wanted to make sure that I was sure that I knew what I was getting involved with. Mm. And so there was a lot of conversation. And even, you know, prior to going to auditions, because me and my mother would be coming up from the south side and south suburbs of Chicago, getting on the Dan Ryan Expressway. Anybody from Chicago know what the fuck I'm talking about with that? Getting on the Dan Ryan Expressway in the middle of rush hour to go downtown to audition for a role that's guaranteed you may not get, only for you to, after your child doing that for a couple of hours, getting back in traffic to head back to the south side, only to have to prepare, get into bed after making dinner. Then you have to prepare your child to do homework. Then you have to get yourself together in order for you to go up and get to work and do the same thing all over again. That's what my mother did for me. Mm. There was a lot of sacrifice that was put in. There was a lot of hard work. There was a lot of dedication and commitment from her. You know what I'm saying?
100%.
The reason why I know how to prepare for an audition today, how I know how to conduct myself on set, how I know how to just be as a professional, I learned all from her. So she was working double time, handling her shit and preparing me for mine. So I owe everything to my mom. Everything. Everything. That's why, you know, when she asks for something, I'd be like, yeah. Even if some of the shit, I'd be like, you don't need that. But if she want it, she gonna get it, because the reason why I got it is because she prepared me to do it. She put me in that space mentally, you know what I'm saying, and spiritually, to where I was able to go out there and get it and attract it into our lives. So, yeah, she can have whatever she want. Love you, Mom. I'm not getting a new Mercedes that you wanted. We gonna have to wait for that one. We'll get something else for right now, but because, man, she know how to ball, boy.
She know how to ball.
She know how to ball.
Yeah.
But I love her to death. That's my dog.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, my mom feels terrible for not focusing in on, like, my talent. Because she used to talk me out of being an entertainer.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Because I was born blind in my left eye. So she just felt like, you handicapped. You can't, people ain't going to, they not going to let you do this. It's not going to be easy for you.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it made me want to work harder to even try to not prove her wrong. I wasn't good at nothing else. When I would go to school, kids thought I was funny. So when I would watch, like, in A Living Color, or when I'm watching Comic View or any of these shows, Def Jam or something like that and whatnot and blah, 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 and I was being inspired by Eddie Murphy movies from Wayans Brothers and all these people that I'm cool with now.
Yeah.
You know,
but isn't that something though?
It's nuts.
If you don't mind me interjecting and saying this, everything happens for a reason. So when your mother, when she was doing that back then, in her mind, she was protecting you.
She was trying to protect me.
And that's probably what needed to happen at that time, because as a kid.
But she was protecting me because she wanted to be a singer, and she was too scared of the rejection she was getting because she wasn't good enough. In her mind, she let people tell her she wasn't good enough. She went to L.A., and my dad was an actor, and people was telling him he wasn't good enough, and they quit.
Again, they quit. But protect, that's protection. No, listen.
This will go when a trauma buddy find another trauma buddy.
Well, yeah, I mean, that listen, and it's your life, so yeah. I can't sit up here.
You can go ahead and diagnose.
No. I'm not gonna sit up here and try to dissect what has happened in your past experience. But I just know a lot of the times when parents do that, it does come from a place of trauma, and the one thing that they don't want to do, I think, is probably put their child in that same kind of situation, thinking that their child would probably react the same way. If not, maybe worse. But her not knowing, you built for this shit. And at the end of the day, you have shown through your determination, you have shown the world and the universe that this is who you are and what your purpose is. Because you here right now. Harking back on something that you said, even when you first brought this up, all of those people that you've watched throughout the course of your life in TV, including myself, we're all close friends now.
We're friends.
So all of that was meant to happen. I'm saying all that to say this. Things don't necessarily happen, and this is kind of a cliche kind of quote now, but it's true. Things don't necessarily always happen when you want them to. They'll happen when it's time for them to happen in your life, when preparedness meets opportunity. And a lot of times, even with me, I've had to come to accept that, where I'll be like, well, man, I'm in this moment right now, deserve it right now. But then something will happen, and it may not work in my favor. But like 5-6 years later, something will happen. I'll look back in retrospect and be like, man, that wasn't meant for me. It was meant for me to do the prime example. And I'm going to share this quick story, and I'll quit running my mouth.
No, you're amazing.
On the Shy.
Yeah.
What a lot of people don't know is that I was cast originally as Ronnie in The Shy.
Get out of here.
Years ago, before, like, when The Shy was still just a pilot and Lena Waithe was still just, you know, an up-and-coming writer, you know, and producer coming up, I had auditioned for the role of Ronnie in The Shy, got it, shot the pilot in Chicago, waited 6 to 7 months for Showtime to come back and say, well, we're going to pick up the show, but the original cast that we had with the show is not coming along with it. We're going to recast it. We're going to retool it. We're bringing in new directors, everything. They had dismantled The Chi as a show as it was back then, and it built up a whole new show, whole new cast. And I was like, oh, shit, that had never happened to me before in my career, ever. It had kind of knocked me off my square a little bit. It had kind of fucked with my ego, made me a little bit insecure as an actor. And here's what I will say, too, so nobody will think my sister Lena was on some bullshit with me. It wasn't that. It wasn't her decision. It was the network's decision.
All the time, yeah.
They had a vision for the show, and being that Lena was still kind of young and still kind of green in their eyes, this was them, pulling a move like, no, you're going to do this our way right now. And, you know, if it works and we continue to go on, then we'll listen to you a little bit more, right? So she called me and she said, brother, I know you've gotten the news, because my manager at the time called me. I'll never forget. I was sitting at a bar looking at college football. I was at 6 feet under on 11th Street. I will never fucking forget this day. I was looking at a Bama game and my phone rang and it was my manager. And so I answered the phone. I was like, hey, what's up? She says, hey, Jason. So listen, we just heard back from, Showtime. So I got good news and I got bad news. And I was like, okay, well, give me the good news. She was like, well, the good news is the show got picked up. I was like, okay, that's great. She said, well, the bad news is you're not going along for the ride. They're recasting the whole show. And my stomach, like, caved in into my spine. And I was just sitting there like, wow. And I sat there for a moment. I let it sink in. And this is a true story, right hand to God. And I heard in my spirit, in here, God telling me, it ain't time yet. And in my mind, I was like, the fuck you mean it ain't time? Like, I just, Lord, forgive me. I mean, you know the talk we had. But I was like, the fuck you mean? Like, it's time now. I earned this role. I auditioned for it.
And I'm from the Chi.
I'm from Chicago. We just shot the pilot. I know I did my thing in a pilot. Why not now? That was my question. Why not now? Fast forward, had a conversation with Lena. She told me, she said, brother, just let me do this the way, and I hope she doesn't mind me sharing this conversation, that the conversation that she and I had, but this is real. It's a testament to her character, actually. She said, brother, I know this doesn't feel right. I know it's not fair, but I'm coming back for you. Just let me do this show the way they want me to do it. Let me build it up. I promise you, I don't know how I'm going to do it. I don't know if it's even going to be this show or another show. But when I get there, I'm coming back for you. Fast forward, 5 years later, I get a call from my attorney, Joshua Edwards. He's like, hey, what's up, man? It's just regular conversation. He's like, hey, what's up, man? It's like, what's up? He said, yo, have you auditioned for The Chi recently or something? I was like, no, not that I know of. He's like, why? He said, well, we just got an offer in. Not even somebody asking if I was available to audition. We got an offer in for this character for Rashad that they want you to play. It starts da-da-da-da-da. You'll be in Chicago, and it's a reoccurring role. It's a guest appearance, but, yeah, it's a straight-up offer. Now, I share that story with you and with everyone else here and everyone else who's watching this show. I share that story to show you that it's about timing. Everything is about timing. That role of Ronnie that I originally got wasn't meant for me. It was meant for that actor. Confirmation for that is that character was killed off. That character been gone.
A terrible death.
Terrible death. Terrible death.
That was the stupidest death I've ever seen in my
terrible
fucking life.
Terrible death.
In TV.
Terrible death. Now, and here's the irony.
Hey, Ronnie.
No.
What the? That's how y'all gonna do it?
No, but no, Ronnie, I mean, after Ronnie killed the kid, yeah, he, I mean, that had to happen.
But the irony,
they could have made it a little bit more creative.
Well, you know what? You tell Lena that. I ain't finna tell her that shit.
No,
I'm trying to work that shit.
I'm trying to get Lena to put me
Lena,
in some
shit.
Lena,
you hear this nigga?
Hey, Lena, I'm just bullshit.
He got suggestions.
No, that was the shit.
He
that
got
was the
notes.
Shit. Y'all killed running the right
he
way,
got
Lena.
Notes.
Yeah, yeah. And I love Slim and the other girl, too. Slim and the girl.
Yeah. But no, here's the full circle moment. That yeah. Even that character that killed Ronnie, Bakari.
Yes, Bakari went on
My character is mentoring that kid now.
Now, on the show. Yeah.
So I'm just saying, like,
yeah,
you know, I just want people to take that into account as it relates to their lives and how they move forward, whether you're in the industry or not. This is applicable to life in general.
Mm-hmm.
When it's your time, it's your time. Just continue to walk in your purpose, feeling confident in knowing that one day it will happen. And as you are waiting and you're in that holding pattern and you're seeing others go before you, living out their moment, be happy for them. Because they've gone through probably the same thing you've gone through. They're on their journey. And they've dealt with their ups and downs. And they've dealt with their rejection. Mm. And they've dealt with their hardships. We all go through it. Mm. So while you're waiting for your moment, be patient and be confident in knowing that your time will come and be happy for others when their time comes. And I guarantee you, when your time comes, you will step into your blessing and it will be yours and nobody will be able to take it away because it's written. And that's real shit. That's real shit. I think a lot of people, if they would...
I'm about to go thrill.
No, if they would embrace that philosophy, you would get a lot less haters out here, man. Like, niggas be hating because they don't see no light at the end of the tunnel. Because in their mind, they can't see no pot at the end of the rainbow, no gold pot at the end of the rainbow. So when they see you having yours, that's when you get a hater. I don't think people are just inherently just evil like that. I think it's just developed over time just from, you know, seeing things and other people's experiences and comparing them to yours. And then all of a sudden you looking like, well, I ain't got shit. And why he got it or why she got it? That's why you have like that kind of energy that gets out there from time to time. But I'm here to tell you, and I'm specifically speaking to the young people out there who are like trying to come up and do their thing. Be happy for others, man. And just wait your turn. Cause it'll come and keep planting good seeds. That good seed that you planted, even if it's just like a positive gesture, even if it's something small, is opening up a door for somebody or giving somebody an inspiring word on the street, even when you feel you ain't got nothing to give. I'm telling you, man, that energy transfers over. That energy comes back around full circle. And before you know it, something will happen in your life where you be like, damn, I just see that coming. What a blessing. And it's because you've sown good into the world. And that's when you'll receive it. So that's just, I'm telling you, it works. I live by it every day, and not every day is fucking roses and peaches and cream. But you know what? When I have my moments, man, it be some real shit where all I can do is get on my knees and thank God. Moments that I've had, man, where I've been like, I didn't see that coming. Or where did that solution to that problem come from? How did that happen? It's all because along the way, leading up to that moment, some good seeds were like planted in the ground. And that's all you got to do, man. That's all you got to do. And I'm telling you, when your time come, it will happen. Look at Jack. Look at Jack, y'all. Real shit. Jack been doing this for a long time. Jack is a funny motherfucker. We all been knowing this for years. We've been seeing Jack on the grind for years, whether it's on stage, whether it's on Wildin' Out. We've been watching him for years. There's been other comedians that have come along and have maybe had their moment sooner than his, whatever. But let me tell you. He's worked consistently. He's kept his head down. He never complains. He builds the relationships. And now you've seen him expand and blow up, having relationships with niggas I can't even hardly get on the phone. I can't get Marlon Wayans and Sean Wayans on the phone. And I did a movie with Marlon. As a matter of fact, can you put me in contact with Marlon? I need to holler at him. But anyway, I'm saying all that to say this. Like, now Jack is in his moment. But it just took time. It just took time. Yeah, hook me up, man. Marlon, why don't you answer the phone, though, bro? Like, I've been calling you, nigga. And I know you got new shows and shit going on.
What's up, player?
But man, he just love you. This nigga just be anything Jack does, this nigga just damn near falling out the chair. Y'all niggas been on Drink Champs together and all that shit. I did a fucking Coen Brothers movie with this nigga. And they talking to him since we rapped on set. I ain't talked to Marlon Wayans since we rapped on set. He said, man, it was nice working with you, man. The fuck is that? Nigga, I'm trying to get that Wayans paper. You feel me? You feel me, Jack?
Yeah. Holy shit. Oh, man. Yo, Jason, man, I got so much more shit I want to ask and talk to you about, man.
But see, I can run my mouth though, man. That'll be a whole 4-hour conversation. I can come back another time, man.
Would you come back?
Of course. Well, Jack, you my friend, man. So you know.
And so listen, man. So we finna. I'm ready to write now. Let's put some projects together, man, and let's take it to the moon.
Let's write something and see if Marlon will help us get over the finish line.
Yeah, 100%.
You give him a call.
100%.
See if he'll do it if you call.
Hey, 100%. He owed me a couple for a couple different reasons.
Oh, he does. No, yeah. I'm just playing too with Marlon. Marlon's actually a great guy. That's my dog. I just always give him a hard time because I'd be like, Marlon, when are we gonna work together?
Y'all did a Coen Brothers movie.
We did the Lady Killers together.
Wow.
Okay. The role that I played in that Wee Mac Funtus, that was the character's name. That was the character that got Marlon's character in the casino. I worked as a janitor.
Mm.
And so I was the one that gave Marlon's character a tour of the casino to where he could map out the plans to where they could rob the casino.
Okay.
So I only worked for one day on that film. But man, what an experience to work with Marlon. That was the first time I got a chance to really see him work as like a serious actor, a serious thespian. Because prior to that, you know, I just seen him on the Wayans Brothers and you know, I think I saw him in Requiem for a Dream or something like that.
Yeah,
I knew he had chops, but that was the first time I had the opportunity to work opposite with him and kind of check his method, you know what I'm saying, and how he gets in a character. So that was dope. And then working with Joel and Ethan Coen, man, that's another. Hey, Joel, Ethan, if y'all happen to see Jack's show, what's up, man?
We're going to send it to him.
Please send this to Joel and Ethan. Joel, Ethan, I'm here, baby. And you know I can get down. Come on, man.
Dig.
Man.
Jason, man. Hey, thank you for coming through the new Jack Thriller City show, man. This is the, now I know you're going to be on the album. And we're going to write some shit together.
Yes, we
are. We're going to take it to the moon and whatnot.
Yes, we are. I'm excited about the future. I'm excited about your future. I'm excited about mine. I'm excited about the future of this city. All the young talent that's down here. I'm excited about us as black creators and other creators, people of color, who are now telling their stories and who are unapologetically presenting their stories now, as they should have, but never got the opportunity to do it. This is an exciting town. This is a renaissance we're in the middle of right now, a true black renaissance in the digital age. And we can get it, and we can make the money. We can monetize it. Nobody has to take anything from us. All we got to do is just stick together and work hard. That's it.
Man, Jason, that is in a nutshell right there, dog.
In a nutshell.
Hey, man, we finna bring you back, man. This makes sense. Make it a part two.
Bring me on back, Jack. I love you. I love what you're doing. You always got my support, man. You really, really do, because you're one of the guys out here that has a good heart. You're a genuine person. And everybody that you encounter, you know, you always leave them with a warm impression, man. And that says a lot about your spirit and about your character and who you are as a man. So that's why I fuck with you, dog. Okay.
Thank you. Hey, with that being said, hey, yo, DJ Wiz, hey, man, go on here to take us out. Let's go.